listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I had a little scratchy music going on there for whatever reason. Couldn't crank up the stereo. But thank again all of you for joining me. And I'm always surprised and excited. I was down at the... Today we're going to be talking about death with dignity. And I must make this claim that I know absolutely... very little about this subject, and I've never given it much thought, but because when you're younger, you don't give thought to that. But as we get older, and then you get involved, and you hear the discussion, and you find, and then you have relatives that suffer, or what have you. So I did participate recently to film and document the hearing on death with dignity, and it was an eye-opener, and as well as very sad and somber occasion that such an important subject and discussion was held in the lower bowels, right next to hell, I guess, in the chamber there at the state senate. And something of this nature, just in its own, on the face value, should have been up on the ground level at least, so that all parties interested, and it should have been a great announcement. And what I observed was absolutely... was not a democratic process, in my opinion, and that's comparing it to other efforts or other issues that have been aired out. I think we, and I'm an animal advocate, and we've had issues where I think the Hawaiian bat got better openness, the declaration that it would be the state mammal, more openness and given more validity than this issue of death with dignity. What I will say, and then I have a guest here who's very knowledgeable and been active in this issue and effort, is Mr. Scott Foster. with Death with Dignity, and I can only say to you, if you witnessed it and put aside the media coverage and the sound bites, you would be embarrassed that the way Josh Green, Senator Josh Green, we did vote for him, Senator Josh Green, the kind and gentle Suzanne Chun Oakland, Mr. Clarence Nishihara, and Glenn Wakai. I can just tell you that if they were on the jury, you'd be guilty, because they don't want to listen to the facts. They don't want to see the smoking gun. They don't want to see anything. They were predisposed, knowing exactly the money had bought them off, and I'll make that statement openly. So it was a sad, sad occasion. And as I say, I don't really have much to offer on the subject, as I'm a newcomer. But you'd be embarrassed to know that your vote, and these are the people that hear such matters while acknowledging that it is an important matter. So anyway, Death with Dignity today is the subject for the first hour, and I'm going to bring in Scott Foster. And Mr. Foster, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning.
Well, I was down there with you, and I'll just let you introduce yourself and what your involvement with this, and we'll go from there.
My involvement, goodness. Death is an uncomfortable subject for most. The older we get, the more maybe comfortable we are at least thinking about it. But talking about it and debating legislation about death is a whole other matter, especially when we have a health care system, as we do in the United States. It's so terribly out of whack, I guess, the amount of money that's in the healthcare system and the way it's administered, I think everybody understands the healthcare system is broken. How does Death with Dignity fit into that? I never thought about it as an expense. But the more I learn about it, and I've been studying the issue for about 20 years, a huge amount of the healthcare dollar goes in the last months of our lives, when we are in the hospital, connected to all the machines, all the heroic actions are being taken. It just costs a lot of money, and of course the healthcare system rather likes that, because it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Just put it that way. So now that we've moved on in this conversation about death with dignity, and some refer to it as physician-assisted suicide, that's fine. It's all a matter of semantics. We prefer to call it death with dignity, because that's what those of us that support the issue want for ourselves and for our loved ones. So here we are, years into the debate. Most who follow this issue will remember that we came within three votes of passing this legislation in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
We lost it in the Senate again by three votes, and that was because the Bishop of Hawaii had sent around a letter to all of the legislators, including there's many, many Catholic legislators down there, basically saying, don't do this or God will get you. And that's a little flippant, but that's basically what was said. So the night before this vote, three votes were peeled away and we lost it. So here we are today. The last hearing on it was in 2007. That happened to also be under Dr. Green's health committee when he was in the House. So he controlled the House Health Committee. Now he's a senator. He happens to be, I guess, the chair of the Senate Health Committee, which on its face to me is a blatant conflict of interest, because the medical community, certainly the ultra-religious community, They don't want this. And it's all a money. It's all a matter of money and God.
Mm-hmm. And not basically in God we trust. That's the money in God. What I did observe was that the panel of senators. What I was most offended by, as again I'm a newcomer, was that they allowed the proponents or the opponents of this bill to stand there and preach the gospel and invoke God and Christianity and even Satan and chastise those that support the bill openly. Now, that's the perfect example of separation of state and church. But to see it being permitted, and in fact, I believe to a great degree, was encouraged by that panel of senators. The other thing that struck me as rather strange was that, as Mr. Green stated, that this was a really serious issue and needed some attention, a broader coverage. The senators that would be hearing this, the full panel wasn't available. Senator Roz Baker came in, and I thought this was going to be a reenactment of Lost in Space. She couldn't find a computer. She walked in. She just looked oblivious to the whole thing. But she then voted with reservation. And so they were in and out, and I know that's normal, but in a situation like this, it just, the writing was on the wall for me, drawing from other instances. It had all the makings that they were already predisposed, and it really wasn't a hearing. It was a way of tongue-lashing out at the proponents of this bill.
Well, most of my friends or people that know me know that I'll put up with about anything except the subversion of the democratic process in government. And my wheels come off when I witness that, and especially when no one stands up and says anything. Now, in 2007, I did stand up and challenge Senator, or then Representative Green, on that process. And what was stunning to me last Monday during this five-hour hearing was there was only one question asked by anyone from the panel, and that was asked by Senator Green to one gentleman that had referred to we proponents of the death with dignity issue as listening to Satan. He had referred to a movie, a 1972 sci-fi movie called Soylent Green that starred Edward G. Robinson and I've forgotten who else, but it was a big movie at the time. And Senator Green is probably too young to remember it. I guess he might have been in grade school in 1972. But the only question he asked was of this gentleman that referred to me as having been listening to Satan. Was to ask him, what did he mean by Soylent Green? And there's got to be some connection there. Soylent Green. Maybe it was his interest in hearing his own name associated with a movie. I don't know. I don't know. But my point is, nobody asked any questions. None of the senators asked any questions of anyone. And they took all of this malarkey that was being delivered to them by very fervent people as, pun intended, gospel.
Mm-hmm.
None of it was challenged. Nothing was challenged. Nor were any questions asked.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the public that was that were not present, here's what some of the things that got me. Mr. Green allowed a great many of the opponents of the bill that were in opposition to the bill to stand and speak, just run on, invoking God, and again, this isn't a discussion whether we believe in God, but this was a process where human beings were sitting there debating over matters that affected the believers, non-believers, and whatever you want to be, whatever position you had. And so in order to do that, you should have been open. They weren't open. Clearly predisposed, again, as I observed. And I've also posted an interview that I had after the fact with Senator Clarence Nishihara. And I got to warn you, if you want to chuckle, if this is the best we can send to the state capitol, there is no shame. They know the TVs are there. They know the microphone's open. They know there's reporters. And they still behave as if someone had their hands up their jacket and money, putting money in their pockets, and they just went ahead and did what they wanted to do. What they did was, after it was all done, there was one little 13-year-old boy, and Mr. Green had closed the hearing and then reconvened the hearing to accommodate this little 13-year-old boy who clearly his parents had written this speech for him. And then once the child came up, made a speech, stumbling and fumbling, again, I encourage all children to participate in this process. It's good to see Junior walk up and testify. As many other, there were other 14-year-olders and 15-year-old kids, and they say, oh, these were great testimonies of substance. I can assure you not a single one of them drove to to the building.
Now, it was sad, and a terrible commentary on the state of democracy in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the subject, this is what these folks are elected to do. They're elected to do their due diligence on the subject matter and ask questions of people. I was stunned to learn many years ago at the legislature that no one is under oath. Now, what does that mean? And I'm not talking about invoking the deity, but and I don't want to see people swearing on a Bible, but I do believe that there needs to be some understanding that when people are before the House or Senate committees, that if they are caught misrepresenting information or out and out lying, as many people I heard Monday were doing, that there should be some penalty. Certainly the elected officials who chair these committees represent the entire state. They don't represent in those instances, in committees, just their district voters, but they're representing the whole state. For those who have seen the Sunday paper, big story. The whole inside section is on the title of it is A Matter of Life and Death. Big, I don't know, 72-point headline. And then I do have an article on the inside, and a great article by writer Lee Catterall from the Star Advertiser. Point being, the public supports this. The latest poll that the Star Advertiser did was 72%. That mirrors or emulates every poll taken in Hawaii and across the nation for the last 20 years. The majority of the public support this issue. And now, what is this issue? I'll read you the description of the bill. This was Senate Bill 803 relating to death with dignity. And the description on the bill is, allows a terminally ill, competent adult to receive medication to end life. It prohibits mercy killings, lethal injections, and active euthanasia. It requires informed consent. It allows alternate doctors to replace attending doctor if the latter declines to prescribe, meaning if a doctor doesn't want to feel philosophically against it, they don't have to participate. It also provides immunity from civil and criminal liabilities for acts taken in good faith. It imposes penalties for unauthorized altering, forging, concealing, destroying, or exerting undue influence in making or rescinding a request for medication. And it requires a monitor at the time of taking the medication. That's it, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Another sad aspect of this was one of the people that brought me to this issue was the late A.Q. McElrath. Many people, A.Q. died, I believe, in 2008. She died in the very circumstances that she she fought so long and hard against, and that was connected to machines and tubes. I talked to AQ a week or 10 days before her death, and she was she had a great sense of humor, but she was lamenting, laying there with all these tubes and machines hooked up. Her kidneys had failed a year or two before, and she knew that she was 90, in her early 90s. She knew that her time was near, and there she was, suffering as she had fought for so long and hard for so many against.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I want to talk more about this, and again, your article is in today's Star Advertiser in the Insights section. And it gives some good details, and the writer, Lee Catterall, also gives some good points. And that's what I expected at this hearing, where people would be fleshing it out with facts. And what I observed there, and you hopefully you can speak to this, was a great bit of erroneous information, such as the states. They quoted Oregon as being a failure. They quoted stated, and not just one of them, and it became obvious that they were repeating what had been written for them. And here's Gary Aquino, and as Mr. Senator Nishihara was being interviewed by me, I was stumbling trying to identify. It was the civil unions bill that I was speaking of, and he inserted the word civil unions. The same group of people that were there in opposition to this were the same people involved in the same church people and the same people that they had. They had some debilitated people that were handicapped and some illnesses, as they'd made declaration. Why would people behave in such a fashion? And I was taken aback by the mere fact that they would. It seems that there was this effort to put this layer of people and parade them down with the, and they have a right to be there and speak out and state their opinion, the people that were handicapped and ill or what have you. But I believe that it was, in my opinion, they were being used. And we saw them saying, well, what if this bill, you pass this bill, it's going to allow them to basically kill us if they don't like us. It's going to allow them to kill the unborn. It's going to allow a person that has a handicap. And it's going to on and on and on and on. So what do you think, Scott? What's your opinion of that?
Well, I know Senator Nishihara rather well. I, in fact, helped with his first election campaign. And I'm a little surprised at his lack of, I hate to say integrity, but maybe that's the word. He's a fine gentleman, an honorable gentleman. But when you interviewed him and attempted to pin him down on what was behind his decision,
mm-hmm.
It basically boiled down to the testimony of the people in this room that day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a lot easier for the churches to turn people out
mm-hmm.
for such hearings on such passionate issues. And I understand their religious fervor, and they're entitled to their beliefs. But to vote on legislation of this significance based on what they heard from just the people in that room, ignoring the failing to do the due diligence on the broad support of this. Now, here's where I would compare it with the civil unions issue, in addition to what you just said. It was many of the same crowd. Granted, the disabled were not out there against civil unions. Some of them were, the disabled, the good folks that were there, who had lived with birth defects their lives, who had been in terrible accidents and paraplegic, quadriplegic, etc., all of those very challenging experiences that those folks go through. That's where I've got to take great exception to their testimony. This bill, right off the bat, says it relates only to people diagnosed terminal illness with 6 months to live. Not a single one of those people that testified would even have qualified for the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the Oregon failure. Again, had these senators, certainly Dr. Green, done his due diligence, he would have found that this year, in fact, just a month ago, the 13th annual Oregon Death with Dignity report was issued by the state of Oregon. It's done through their health department. They don't fool around. It's authentic documentation, statistics, all of the numbers that are reported. No problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say no problems. I mean, in a scenario such as this, of course, there are some misleading data, but overall, the system has functioned for 13 years. The program has functioned for 13 years in Oregon at almost without a hitch, and I say almost because anything that has been questioned, and believe me, they've carefully scrutinized it. The Catholic Church, of course, spends a lot of money on opposing issues like this, and if they couldn't find anything to have it declared unconstitutional, illegal, it's probably okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is the Carol Cox Show. I'm here talking death with dignity with Mr. Scott Foster. And if you'd like to call, have a comment, anything of that nature, please don't hesitate. 524-1080. 524-1080. I've posted one of the interviews with Senator Nishihara and comments made by Senator Green on carolcox.com, carolcox.com. And what I was looking at there was, I want to talk about the money. You share with me and followthemoney.org. And I noticed the Senator Baker is in receipt of quite a bit of money from pharmaceuticals, companies and medical associations or whatever. And they were there testifying against it. Dr. Green, apparently, as you say, but if you could speak to that, Scott, on some of the monies, Follow the Money.
Follow the Money is a website that I have worked with for 10 or 15 years. I've also been very active in trying to pass voter-owned elections, which is also called clean elections. And we began supplying the data to Follow the Money, the late Dr. Ira Roeder and I, and this was in the days before all of the campaign spending reports were filed electronically, and we would take interns down to the State Campaign Spending Commission and copy every single page of every single legislator's financial documents and send this to this what has now become followthemoney.org. What they do is they take it all and compile it by what they call sectors. There's real estate sector and insurance sector and health sector. So I checked with Follow the Money, and sure enough, those reports, coincidentally, 2 days before this hearing, had been all filed and ready. You can look at, again, followthemoney.org. You can find your own, who's giving money to your own state representative and senator. And it's very revealing. A full third, 20%, 33 1/3%, a full third of Dr. Green's money comes from the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
What is the healthcare industry? Well, it's everything from hospitals to big pharmaceuticals, little pharmaceuticals, insurance people, lawyers, that deal with health-related lawsuits, etc., and many, many, many physicians. The hospice industry, and people say, oh, well, the hospice, you know, that's, those are all good people. Well, they are all good people, but they also, that's their job. That's their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's entitled to give whatever money they want to who, but it is, I think it's very telling that a full third of his money comes from those special interests that are vested in the status quo, keeping things just the way they are. And as I said earlier, we know that, that our health care system is broke.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not surprised at Senator Baker's money, and she didn't get quite the huge proportion that Senator Green did. I was a little surprised at Senator Chen Oakland's, the amount of money she got, which was maybe third to Green's. But there it all is in black and white, and there's no smoking gun to it, but it just shows you who gives money to these folks that wind up being the chairs of these powerful committees that just happen to vote the way they would prefer.
Yeah, well, no smoking guns, but I can say to you, walking the walk and talking the talk. Josh Green talked that talk. And now I'm understanding and suggest to me why he's named, and he really deserves that name, Green, you know, as in money. And the way this hearing was handled was absolutely, he should be ashamed. You just don't become a doctor by not being ethical. But I watched that, and then that speaks to the democratic process. See, he didn't just allow a vote against that and have a charade. He robbed the people of an opportunity, as he said, oh, this is a great issue and it should have greater coverage of what have you, suggesting that, paraphrasing. And yet he holds it in the basement, and last time around he was at the head of it, who found its way, as you've described, killed it. And then this occasion he killed it. So no smoking guns, but I can say I can see the skid marks in the rubber that show that he was in a hurry to put this aside and kill it. And it doesn't take a genius to figure it all out. When you see, again, how uninterested, as I have the video, if you folks, I'm going to post that little piece with Senator Roz Baker. That's telling right there. That's the smoking gun. She walks in, and I thought maybe she was in the wrong place. You know, I didn't even know she was on the committee. And when she found her way to the podium, she was stumbling and fumbling, and quite naturally the safe thing to do is vote with reservation. But yet, this is a substantial and significant issue. So, again, speaking to the Democratic Party, you got to, if you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk. At least afford the people an opportunity to hear it openly, and this wasn't an open process. So, Scott, what they did were, I noticed the children would come up, and what amazed me was that great actors. Now, I'm going out on the limb here and saying it was acting, because they were sitting in the audience and chatting and chittering and what have you, and applauding when others would cite religious quotes and verses and what have you. And then when they get up and they talk and they were emphatic and they were repeating that they talked about the Netherlands, Oregon, Washington, Montana, and how those things failed. And then on cue, they would cry. The 15, 16-year-olds and some of the older people. What went on there?
Well, scripted is the short answer. I was stunned, too, to see those children being used as pawns by their parents and their church. It was sad to watch. And as you said, there was that 14-year-old boy.
13.
And, you know, he read very well, but he did stumble over some of the words mm-hmm. that obviously he had were words that were not in his 13-year-old vocabulary.
Well, I was waiting for one of the ministers to run up there and go, no, this is what we want to get back on script, but, you know.
Yeah, well, hold your breath on that. But nonetheless, you mentioned the Democratic Party. Significantly, the chair of the Democratic Party, Dante Carpenter, was there. One of the young staff from the party, Jason, and forgive me, Jason, I can't remember your last name, getting old, you know, gave very succinct, articulate statement for the Democratic Party. This mm-hmm. issue has become what's called a priority issue with the party. When the resolution, which was passed by the Democratic Party State Convention last year, 2010, when it passed, it was one of two bills that received a standing ovation from the entire, I don't know, 1,000 people in the room, I guess, all delegates. Now, what am I talking about? The original covenant between elected officials and the Democratic Party was, we will work, the party members will work to elect you as Democrats, and once you're elected, you will carefully consider and pass legislation recommended by the party. Well, that's changed. Candidates no longer depend on the party for their money. All they get from the Democratic Party is the ability to use the Democratic Party D, meaning they run as a Democrat, as the Republicans run with an R beside their name. So that covenant has been broken. They know they come and get the D. They're allowed to opt out of some of these issues that are sponsored by resolutions from the party, and then go take their seats in the legislature and, frankly, vote any damn way they want. This may be changing, because what I am seeing within the party rank and file is not just this issue, but many other issues are being ignored by the legislature that are being sponsored and promoted by the Democratic Party. So I think you're going to see the rules tightened up and the elected officials being held a little more accountable to the party. Now, I'm no apologist for the Democratic Party, but I must say that the Democratic Party gets a lot of bad press based on the fact that what some of the folks we let run as Democrats do, ignoring what the party, the larger, greater membership of the party actually want to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big disconnect currently, and has been for many years, between the party and the elected officials. I believe that that's changing. I think that the Obama Democrats, the new younger folks that came in, a tsunami, a tidal wave of voters to help elect President Obama, those folks are paying more attention than in the past, and they're not as politically connected.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess that's okay, but can we wait until they come together? Who is the whip there, and who now is the chair, and who handles and steers and screens? And when they get in, a bad player gets in, what are the checks and balances? That, I think that's the problem. And but when you're catering to, when you just openly allow, you mentioned a smoking gun, and you mentioned you can't prove it about the parents coaching the kids. Well, I just so happened to be out in the entranceway, and there was a mother there coaching two kids, telling them how to deliver their speech. And reading, and she's, it was something to the effect that she was talking to others, praise the Lord and what have you. And I just thought, wow. And this is what Josh Green and Senator Nishihara said was compassionate testimony.
Yes.
That's the problem. And I think that, you know, I got a call from Maui. People said that Senator Nishihara, on another subject, has killed a bill, refused to chair it on the foie gras bill. I don't know what the fix is, but they need to start off in the beginning start being ethical. And you can tell with someone where they're getting the backing from. If a guy shows up and he was a no-namer, now he got big money and able to run a hardy campaign, should be red flags there. The question, who's funding you? What are you doing? What's your commitment? Instead, as I've talked on the show before, some of the problems is you can be Republican or what have you, or be some party in opposition to the Democrats, but overnight you can step across the aisle and become a Democrat.
Sad but true.
So, you know, and I think that's what we have to start addressing. I think we have a caller. Good morning, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'd like to say thank you, Harold, for bringing this subject to everybody's attention. It's so important. I'd like to make the point that this is our life, our death, our choice. And we shouldn't have our choices taken away by minority groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. When we're terminally ill and dying anyway, and possibly in terrible pain, we need the option of deciding whether or not we want to die and time our death so that we don't have to go through and die literally in excruciating pain. It's so important that so many people can start to understand the problem that they may have at the end of life. And I think this is such a wonderful thing that you're doing, is bringing this subject to everybody's attention and perhaps promote more in-depth research for each individual to find out exactly what does go on. What is going to happen to me when I'm about to die? Apparently, through statistics, I've learned that we all have probably a romantic view of how we're going to die, which will be peacefully in our sleep or a very quick heart attack. Those conditions happen to about 20% of us. The rest of us, with no idea how we're going to die. And if we choose not to die in terrible pain, then we should. It's our life. And it should be our choice. And it should not be the choice of minority groups. It's insulting.
Yeah, well, it was insulting that day. But, and I'm not familiar with the subject enough to chime in with any opinion, but what I do, I can opine on the manner in which it was handled. And so thank you, caller, for your comments.
Well, you're welcome, and I just hope this promotes so much more discussion on the subject.
Okay, well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Scott, in response to her, if you have any, but also, is it really dead? Can this bill, is there any call to action that people could do right now to nothing is impossible? What do you think? You're the politician, man.
Well, is the bill dead? No, this is a biennium. We have two other bills in the House that have not been heard of. I'm going to try to get something moving in the House. Dr. James Peach today if anyone is really interested in this issue, get the Sunday Star Advertiser. The whole insight section is devoted to this issue. But Dr. James Peach is quoted as saying, why not reconvene the Blue Ribbon Committee and look into the context of Oregon, look at it in the context of Oregon, in the context of what we've learned. Well, there's a number of things that could be done. I think we've studied it to death. I think all the statistics are there. What I would like to see, as I told Senator Green, was if he, and you saw me telling this, if you are sincere in saying that you want to see the bigger debate on this, then pass the bill out and let the full Senate debate it. It's only when it gets to the floor of the House and the Senate that you really see these debates, the committees meeting, as you said, in the basement with 100 people there and three senators with two or three others walking in and out, you know, as though they have other things on their mind, and they do, of course. I would recommend to the listeners, first of all, maybe look at this Sunday article. My article is there about what actually took place in that committee. Our website is there, which is, has all the information anyone would need to know to really get up to speed on this issue, and that, that website is HawaiiDWDSociety.org. HawaiiDWDSociety.org.
Mm-hmm.
That'll connect you there. I'm also going to be writing some more on this in my weekly column in Kama Aina's. That's Kama Aina with an S. .com, where I take on some of these tough issues and give the political inside of them as Carol and I work on various issues together. So we've got quite a network out there of where people can come to get information. But the bottom line is the individual has got to call or write their senator and representative and basically say, cut it out, pass this legislation. We've got a perfect bill. The bill in the House and Senate was written by the very fine lawyer that argued this case with at the Supreme Court.
What's the bill number?
803 is the Senate bill number. I don't have the House bills right here in front of me.
Okay, so if you could put that in your article, and we'll link up at carolcox.com, maybe we can ask the people at minimum, call their senators and their state reps and asked to have this bill put up for hearing.
Yeah, I think we deserve a bigger debate, and I think we deserve it. And everybody's going to say, oh, we've got these economic problems and labor problems and all these other problems. Of course we do. But we also, death is not going to go away, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And we need this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something that, again, I can't speak to the details of this and this bill and death with dignity. I just can't speak to that, but I can speak to the charade that occurred and that I've witnessed. And you can't rob people of an opportunity to choose for themselves. And you can't allow people to come in and say, but the Lord told me, or my spiritual leader says it's improper to do this for you as another person. And I think that they talk about a slippery slope. And if you real quickly, we're coming down to the closing, but speak to that slippery slope theory that they talked about, the Nazi eugenics, and real quick, and show how the testimony that came in, this is what Senator Nishihara and Josh Green identifies as compassionate.
Well, the slippery slope is the argument that primarily the disabled use. In other words, if we pass this bill, it's a slippery slope to people being able to kill us because we have birth defects and physical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That's the slippery slope. In other words, you can't do this because it will wind up as something else. And, you know, the bill says right on front, allows a terminally ill, competent adult to receive medication to end life. End of the story.
Well, hopefully you all would be available to come back and talk about this. And, again, what they can do is call their senators, the listeners out there, call the senators and state reps and ask them to hear this bill. SB
803. And there are House bills there, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's time. It's past time, and enough people make those phone calls, or when they run into their representatives in the market or their gas station, tell them what you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did see some compassionate testimony, and I also saw some people there that were compassionate and that trying to simply exercise their rights, and for some reason they were stripped of that opportunity. And that's when, speaking of death with dignity, that's death of a democracy, when you see such a charade And all the words are there. It was compassion and testimony, and the people have spoken. But in fact, if you can't vote, at 13, 14, one young man stood there, and I thought, how eloquent. I wished at that age, or even at this age, I could speak in such a fashion. Clearly educated and well-versed. But the problem was, he was reading from a paper that then his sister got up and practically repeated the same thing.
Well, I think that's the brainwashing that the lady was referring to with the Nazis. I mean, they're brainwashing their own children and don't realize it.
Mm-hmm. But we all need our own personal opportunities in a democracy, and when our senators and our legislative process strips us of that, then we should be dying to get it right.
Amen, brother.
Anyway, thank you, Scott, and we'll talk about this. And please go out if you want to find more details of this. Go to the Star Advertiser. There's in the Insight section today. Scott has an article there, and the author Cottrell.
And they were kind enough to publish our website address, too, so that's there.
Okay, well, thank you guys for tuning in, and we're going to come back. I have another subject we're going to be talking about, vegetarianism and health, and it had nothing to do with each other, dying and health. This was just the way it played out, and I was fortunate to meet someone, Rebecca Woodland, who has written a book called The Blonde Vegetarian, and quite naturally just what it says, but if you read the book, and she has some interesting things to share with us about vegetarianism and health and what have you, and so we can live healthy, and it's not a commercial, she's not paying for the service, it's an outreach that I reached out to bring her in and offered her an opportunity to talk about the things that she do, and I think you'll find it quite interesting. So please join in on the next hour at carolcox.com.
Half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on K108.